Okay. Any questions so far?
Yeah.
When they talk about the reasons why you have a precious human rebirth, you've got the pure morality, the practice of the six perfections, and making the prayers.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, what's the difference between the pure morality and the paramita of ethical discipline?
Oh, okay.
And then also, the six paramitas, are they practiced within the sphere of emptiness to have the human life, or is it just the way that ordinary beings practice?
Okay. So when we talk about the causes for having a precious human life, meaning a life where we have the opportunity to learn and practice the Dharma, then there's three main causes. One is ethical conduct, two is the six far-reaching practices, and three is making dedication prayers, steering the virtue that we've created so it'll ripen in a certain direction. So one question was, what's the difference between the first cause, ethical conduct, and the ethical conduct in the second cause, which is the six far-reaching attitudes? They're the same, okay? Because ethical conduct is the principal cause that gives us an upper rebirth. Sometimes there may be other actions which may create the karma to have an upper rebirth, but by and large, principally, it's ethical conduct. Okay. Then your other question was, does it have to be the six far-reaching practices? Because, you know, then what about all these other people who don't, you know, they're very good people, but they don't even know the words six far-reaching practices. Yeah, does that mean? They say the six far-reaching practices in the context of having a precious human life with the opportunity to practice the Mahayana path and attain enlightenment, okay? So to create the cause to have a precious human life where we meet the Mahayana teachings and can follow the Bodhisattva path, you know, then trying to do the six far-reaching practices, in other words, acting with bodhicitta, reflecting on emptiness, that is very good for helping to create the cooperative conditions to be able to meet the Mahayana path. However, to have a general precious human life with the opportunity to practice the spiritual path, mm-hmm. it doesn't have to be the six far-reaching attitudes. Mm-hmm. It can be plain old generosity, plain old patience, plain old joyous effort. It doesn't have to be the far-reaching joyous effort or far-reaching concentration. It can be plain old, okay? Which are actually, they're not plain and they're not old. They're quite, you know, wonderful practices. Yeah? Okay? And then the thing about the dedication, why that's important, is because it's like, when you have something valuable in your mind, you want to steer it towards a good direction. You don't want to just kind of leave it there to get blown away by the wind, you know. I mean, if somebody gives you $100, you don't just kind of leave $100 sitting around on the sofa. Yeah? You know, you take it, you pack it away in a nice, clean place, and, you know, you dedicate it for everything you want to spend it with. What we're trying to do is think of, you know, rejoice in having the opportunity to create merit, to do things that are virtuous, that are wholesome, and then just not leave it there, but really steer it and dedicate it so that it will ripen in enlightenment, so that it will ripen in us having conducive circumstances in the future to be able to practice. And they say that merit that is dedicated towards enlightenment never is exhausted. Yeah? Because you've dedicated it for enlightenment, enlightenment is pretty limitless and broad, and it's for all sentient beings, then the power of that to bear the result never gets exhausted. If you just dedicate something, may I be wealthy in my future life, it will ripen as wealth in a future life, and then that karma is finished. Okay? So that's why it's always good to try and motivate and dedicate with as big of a mind as we possibly can, because if we do that, then all the other things leading up to that come by as a byproduct. Okay, so if you dedicate for your own and others' enlightenment, then having a good rebirth and being able to meet the Dharma, well, that's going to come as a byproduct, because you have to have that to be able to continue practicing in future lives. Mm-hmm. Okay? Yeah.
A question about generosity.
Mm-hmm.
With regards to the things we give and then we're forgiven, and not harming the recipient,
mm-hmm.
I was wondering if this includes, for example, that giving things to people or being generous with them in a way that is encouraging a bad habit of theirs, perhaps like maybe being demanding or abusive in some way, like.
What's an example?
Like kids. They're always asking, they're asking the most ridiculous things to their parents.
Ah.
To be generous for the parents to give them those things.
Oh, okay. Okay, so the question is, sometimes when we're being generous, couldn't we be encouraging somebody else's bad habit? And the example is when kids want all sorts of ridiculous things, and then as a parent you think, I'm going to be generous to my kid and, you know, get them their own computer and their own this and their own that and their own other thing. And that's generosity for your child. I agree with you. I don't think that's proper kind of generosity, because as a parent, you have to not just give material things, you know. And of the material things, the important things to give are food, shelter, clothes, and medicine, because that's the requisite to stay alive. But the important thing you have to give as a parent is good values to your child, and to help them create good habits. If you always give your child everything they want and you cave in to every demand they make, you're not benefiting that child. You're spoiling them. And the child's going to have, you know, is going to really find it very tough when they're adult when they can't get everything they want, because they have that habit from when they're little of just saying, I want, and mom and dad give it. And then, you know, when you're grown up, life doesn't work that way. And so they've had no training in how to deal with the frustration of not being able to get what you want. And so I think helping kids learn to deal with that frustration is a very important gift that parents give their kids. It's much more important than giving them another toy and another toy and another vacation and another this and that. Yeah, Venerable Semkhe was just telling me at her check-in today about how she's looking back and things that her mom had her do when she was little that she didn't like, that now she's really looking back and saying, wow, I'm so glad she made me do that, because she taught me a lot of skills that are useful now as an adult, you know, that make me a responsible adult. Yeah?
How do you deal with the feeling that come off when it seems like someone else's conventional appearance is bothering you?
Mm. Okay, so you're asking kind of about the judgmental mind when somebody else's conventional appearance is disturbing to you. So you mean like if somebody's very dirty and unkempt, or if somebody's acting in a rude way, what do you mean?
Them do different things with different people, and they're nicer to others, they're not nicer to some other person, and see all those conventional appearances and feelings that you feel.
Okay. Okay, so when you see somebody who's very nice to one person and then a moment later is kind of nasty and rude to somebody else, or you see people acting in very two-faced ways, or people being manipulative and phony or dishonest or whatever, And then, so how to work with the feelings that come up on our part when we look at people like that. Okay? Everybody have this problem? Yep, I think we all have it. Okay? One thing that I find very helpful when I see this kind of thing is I think this is a really good example to me of how I don't want to be. Yeah? And so, you know, I can really, like, especially if somebody's acting two-faced, then to really say, I don't like that quality in that other person. Instead of judging the person and saying the person is bad, say, I don't like that behavior. And then to say, ask myself, am I beyond acting that way myself? The answer is no. Okay, so then that person, what they're doing is really good, a really good example for me on to make me very attentive and careful so that I don't act that way. Because if I act that way, then look at what the effect I'm going to be having on other people. And look at the effect I'm going to have on myself if I act up that way. So I find that very, very helpful. Instead of focusing so much on the other person and judging them, to think about the action and then to focus more on me and the potential for me to do that action.
You don't want to let the other person know that this seems like it's going on.
Oh, okay. So then should we let the other person know that we see some defect in the way that they're behaving? It depends a lot on what our relationship with the other person is. Okay? If it's somebody that you don't know very well, and it's just not a big thing, then it's probably not something you would comment on. You wouldn't go up to a stranger on the street and comment on their poor behavior. Yeah? If it's somebody that you know quite well, or somebody that you're living with, you know, here we live together in community and we're dealing with each other a lot and we all have the aspiration to grow as human beings, then, you know, if we notice that kind of thing in somebody else, then when we're having a community meeting, you know, we might say, you know, I've been seeing that behavior, I don't know somebody else's motivation or what's going on in them, but this is the effect that the behavior's been having on me. Yeah, and I thought it might be nice to be able to talk about it, because maybe I'm misapprehending their behavior, or maybe they're just doing something and they're not aware of what they're doing, and it could be helpful to them if we bring it up. So I think it depends on the situation, you know, how well we know the person, what the thing is, all, you know, different factors. And I think it's always good when we bring stuff up, instead of pointing the finger at somebody and saying, you're doing this, you're doing that, to say, you know, okay, this is what the situation appears like to me. I don't know what's going on with you, but this is how I've been feeling and reacting to it. And I just think it might be helpful if we talked about it. So you're talking about your own experiences and reactions, and you're not blaming the other person, saying, you make me feel this way. Okay? You're just saying, okay, there's this kind of behavior. Yeah. But this is how my mind's reacting to it. So let's do our dedication.
May the spiritual teachers who lead me on the sacred path, and all spiritual friends who practice it have long life. May I pacify completely all outer and inner hindrances, grant such inspiration, I pray,
with the lives of the venerable spiritual masters be stable, and their divine action spread in the ten directions. May the light of Losung's teaching dispelling the darkness of the beings in the three worlds always increase. Sangharu Ratna Mandala Kandiryatayami. Due to this merit, may we soon attain the enlightened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind not yet born arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore. In the snowy mountain paradise, hear the source of good and happiness. Powerful tending gets a generous ease. May you stay until samsara ends. May the deeds of explaining and practicing the Dharma done by groups supporting the teachings and their upholders who spread the view of dependent arising and nonviolent actions in the ten directions, and especially at Shravasti Abbey in the West Bowl.